The Small Business Administration is proposing what some people call the death sentence for one government contractor, and that company is not likely to be the last one. Larry Allen's president of Allen Federal Business Partners. He is writing about microtech in his newsletter this week, and Larry's my guest today for Industry Chatter. Larry, this is making people really nervous all across the government space. Tell me what's behind the deal with microtech. Tony Jimenez has been on the show before, but what kind of trouble is he and this company in?
Well, Francis, the most immediate trouble they face is that they're suspended from doing government business as of now. SBA made that issuance December 20th, so they can't pursue any new federal business. On top of that, the SBA has proposed them for debarment, which is the death penalty you referred to at the top. That would place microtech on the sidelines of government business for a minimum of 3 years. In addition to the company, SBA has also proposed that Tony and at least one of the other senior executives for microtech personally be placed on the debarred list. So that is a very heavy indication indeed that the SBA is concerned with some of the activities of this company.
Now, we have a link later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth to a Washington Post story that will give you the details about the microtech story. And there's no need for us to reinvent the wheel here. What I do want to talk about, though, Larry, is the implication that this has for everybody else that's doing business with the government, particularly in the area of set-asides, which is where it looks like if they did indeed go wrong, microtech went wrong.
Right, and this is a continuing trend in the government market. We first saw this really start with the Veterans Administration targeting storefront small businesses that were technically service-disabled veteran-owned, but really didn't do any work. And over the last 18 months to 2 years, the VA has tried to purge the government contract roles of companies that don't actually provide anything other than a storefront. So now we have the case of microtech, and you know, they had been a success story, Francis, and it's worth noting that the SBA, the VA, and GSA all gave awards or praise to microtech over the years for being an innovative, small, minority-owned business. And then when some of the Washington Post allegations came out that showed that they may have been a little bit too closely tied to another company, which would have invalidated their size status, these same agencies were the ones who were shocked to find possible improprieties.
Now, when you say it like that, you say it like almost this is something that goes on all the time and people just kind of look past it.
Well, I'm not sure that they look past it, but there are government agencies and government officials who are eager, perhaps a little bit too eager, to point to small business success stories, particularly when you're talking about a small disadvantaged owned small business. People want to believe the good news and they want to see the innovation. And the fact is there are plenty of innovative small businesses, minority owned or otherwise, but you get a couple, particularly with personalities that you kind of like. Tony's a big guy, big supporter of the United Fight Club, so, you know, he's a guy's guy. And, you know, people being people, they start to say, you know, this is our guy, this is going to be our poster child for success. And yet, you know, and then everybody on both sides kind of get caught up in it.
So what do I take away from this if I'm running a company, no matter what the size, no matter what the status of the leadership is of the company, you know, what I qualify for or don't qualify for? What do I learn from this? What should I be paying attention to as this develops, Larry?
Well, I think there are two basic things to pay attention to, Francis. First is make sure that you are not certifying yourself as a small business if, in fact, you know that you are no longer small or have reason to believe that you are no longer small. Clearly, the trend at the SBA is to go after businesses that claim they're small and are not. So, you know, right now you have annual certifications, and a contracting officer can ask you to certify to your small business status at any time. The second takeaway is that it pays to take some time to study the SBA's rules of affiliation. Now, these are complex, Francis, and I don't recommend that people tie themselves in knots over reading every little paragraph or subparagraph of these rules. However, this is one of the things that has gotten Microtech caught up, and that is that they were affiliated in the legal term with a larger business, and in fact, there was very little, if any, separation between those two businesses, so goes the allegations, and therefore the company wasn't really small. So you have to be somewhat aware of who you're affiliated with, the extent to whom you are doing business, and if you're a small company that's doing a lot of business with one partner, you definitely want to make sure that you're not running afoul of these rules.
At the core, it sounds like you're saying, though, just play by the rules. However they apply to you, wherever you are in life, play by them if you want to keep doing business with the government. I mean, that's what it boils down to, isn't it?
It really is. And the vast majority of companies do try to play by the rules. And I think, you know, from what we know about Microtech, I think they probably tried to play by the rules. The rules of affiliation are, as I mentioned, difficult to understand, even if you're a seasoned government contract attorney. However, you know, there are other companies out there who think that they're the ones whose number will never come up. Well, take that to a whistleblower. Any whistleblower in town would be happy to take that bet with you. And most of the fraud cases that are bought in government contracting today are bought by whistleblowers. And that can be not just a former employee of yours. It could be a competitor. It could be a competitor's employee. There are plenty of people out there who are going to try to have fun and profit off of a government contractor's misdealings, real or alleged. And even if they are alleged, Francis, it takes a lot of money and time to defend yourself against these things. So in the long run, it really is better to just play by the rules.
I mix them up all the time, Larry. Is it the SBA, Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Small Business Program, or the VA where you can self-certify?
I believe that's the SBA's program. The VA puts you in a very steady and steadfast certification process.
Yeah, oh, that okay. Because and that's been the issue on the other side, is that there are a number of people that think that the VA program is too tough on people to get through. And on the other hand, you have the SBA who just, you do it yourself.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like almost going back to second grade, Francis. Somebody talks out in class and the entire class gets punished. It's the same thing here. You had a few bad actors, particularly at the VA, who weren't really doing any value add. They were just jacking up the price that the government paid for things. And the result is that the VA has now clamped down on that. And they want to do business with service-disabled firms, but they want to make sure that those are actual legitimate businesses. I think that's the right thing. Whether it's too tough or not, you know, you have to look at it from the perspective that, first, not everybody has an inherent right to do business with the government. The government does have an ability, or should have an ability, to choose the types of companies they're going to do business with. And secondly, it's putting legitimate service-disabled veteran-owned businesses at a further disadvantage, because they're having to compete against people who are mere storefronts and not really offering anything.
All right, stay there. I want to continue this conversation on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio. My guest is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners and an expert in all things industry to government. Back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Larry Allen, the president of Allen Federal Business Partners And we talked about one of the items in your week ahead this week, Larry, and that was the issue with microtech. You're also writing about predictions for the federal business climate. And you cite the latest information from Deltek. And I don't mean to pick on Deltek, because I think the work that they do is terrific. And Deltek guests have been on this program a number of times. I just wonder, though, if we have as many predictions and forecasts and so on as we need now, or maybe there are too many, when we don't even really know what to expect beyond, you know, maybe now September 30th of this coming year, but forecasting beyond that strikes me as really, really difficult at this point.
Well, I think you're really onto something, Francis. There are a number of organizations that attempt to forecast what's going on in terms of federal budgeting and federal spending, and a lot of government contractors are willing to pay good money for that data. Whether the data rings true or not is another story. Again, not with you, not meaning to impugn Deltek. I work with Deltek and some of the other companies on joint projects from time to time. However, you know, we have definitely gotten to the point where a number of government contractors literally tie themselves in knots trying to figure out what exactly is going to happen with a certain agency's budget. And so much so that I think they end up missing opportunities that would otherwise be right in front of them. There's this kind of obsession that we have to be first and we have to know what the dollar levels are. And the reality is that almost anybody who participates in this market on a regular basis knows the type of market we're in generally. And for 95% of us, that's a good enough bellwether in order to be able to predict our federal business success. So, you know, wrangling over that last tenth of a decimal point and trying desperately to figure that out isn't always worth it.
And tell me if your experience is the same as mine. My experience with the average entrepreneur or CEO is I'm really good, so I'm going to beat the market anyway.
Well, that certainly is true. And it's kind of an interesting contrast, because some of the companies that I was thinking about that tie themselves in knots tend to be the larger companies. The ones who not only subscribe to outside services, but certainly have a robust internal capability to crunch numbers down to specific accounts that they care about inside their own businesses. And yet, you see the smaller entrepreneurial companies saying, you know, I need the basic information. Once I get the basic information, I'm good. And I've got my project, and I've got my solution, and I'm going to go out and sell it. And I think that somewhere in between those two approaches is the magic answer.
All right. And then given that, if we look at this more broadly rather than trying to figure it down to the dollar, you write about a couple of things that Deltek forecasted, and they're, you know, they're pretty obvious, most of them. But one in particular I thought was interesting was you write about data center optimization, and then you write, note, it's no longer consolidation. What happened?
Well, we've gotten into the point of the federal data center consolidation initiative. It's now several years old, and chief IT people in the government, people in OMB, have stopped talking about consolidating the low-hanging fruit. In fact, the government changed up its policy earlier this calendar year when it talked about how it was going to move forward in terms of data center optimization, that they were shifting away from closing data centers unless those were some of the old standard bear ones that hadn't gotten a look or perhaps had been hiding literally in a broom closet. But more than that, they were going to optimization, which is making better use of the storage capabilities that each agency has, and really, I think, trying to also promote cross-agency cooperation so that, you know, if I'm in NASA and I need a little bit of extra storage space and transportation has it, that I can use what transportation has rather than set up another server farm.
I wonder how many agencies are willing to go to that trouble when there doesn't seem to be a universal resource that I can go to and see who's got what.
Well, I think the first step, you're absolutely right. The first step is to look inside, not even at the agency level, but each department inside an agency and try to look at optimization there on a very basic scale. And then agencies can start looking inside their own agency on how to consolidate resources. You know, it's a nice pronouncement for a management and budget office to make, and exactly the type of pronouncement you would expect them to make. But we know that when you get into an individual agency or department, turf wars are still alive and well, and that's going to inhibit some of that optimization momentum.
The cultural part of that, Larry, is something that you can make rules about and you can make policy about and all of that, but it's just so hard to get people to change.
It is, and it is the people that are in the equation, and you can't, there's always been, I know it's heretical to say on a Washington, D.C. radio station, but there are limits to what government policy can do in terms of affecting basic human behavior. and this is one of those areas where we see them. So I think that we will continue to see optimization and consolidation because agencies have budget money for those functions. And when they have budget money for that type of thing, they will find a way to spend it. But in terms of looking in for innovative solutions, I don't know that we're in a market mindset right now where innovation and is something that a lot of agencies are thinking about.
Well, if it saves them money, then yes,
right.
I would agree with that. But if it's not going to do that, then that doesn't sound like, it doesn't seem like that's the kind of innovation that agencies are looking for.
Right, and this is a conversation I had earlier this week with some people in industry, apt for industry chatter, and that is that a number of agencies kind of automatically equate innovation with, oh, I've got to spend more money if I want the innovative solution. And that's not the case at all. To your point, innovative solutions, I think, by their design, should be money savers. And getting that mindset changed is as important as anything else.
Yeah, and I wasn't implying that the agencies aren't interested in innovative ideas and didn't want to hear it unless it was a money saver, but that does certainly seem to be the door opener at this point.
Oh, no question. That's what I tell my clients. Look, your return on investment proposition has to jump off the page.
All right. Larry, it's great to have you on as always. I'm going to put a link later on today to the week ahead so people can get that. And thank you for being on the program today as always, my friend.
Francis, I enjoyed it. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. Same to you. Larry Allen's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we'll put my conversation with Larry up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, too.